Confusing the roles of church and state.
Can a matter of church discipline be appealed from the church to the state? It's kind of like the state becomes a synod or a higher level of appeal of a church discipline decision. That raises question of church practice. It raises question of church doctrine. It raises question of judging him to be sufficiently repentant or not, things that the courts aren't equipped to do.
On the feature today, ARPA lawyer John Sikkema on a pending Supreme Court case involving whether the secular courts should have any say in cases of church discipline. In the news, ARPA is out with a new respectfully submitted policy report, this one on preborn human rights. Manitoba moves to strengthen conscience protections for doctors, debunking some of the myths around crisis pregnancy centers, ARPA bringing yet another lawyer on staff, and a final look back at this month's God and Government Youth Conference.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
ARPA has released a new respectfully submitted policy report, this one on the issue of abortion and preborn human rights. Law and Policy Director Andre Schutten.
The first highlight, I'd say, is its focus on using the language that I believe is winsome in today's culture, and that is the language of human rights, and basing it in science. We really pull the reader through both the scientific record and then relate it to human rights, and how currently Canadian law is completely incompatible with both science and human rights. And then it proposes a reasonable first few steps towards protecting preborn human rights. A gestational limit on abortion, and recommendations regarding informed consent and advance notice, all of those kinds of things. So I think it's a reasonable policy report in the sense that it talks about reasonable first steps, but it's also one that's strongly principled, one that looks to the complete scientific record, to the complete discussion on what are human rights and who do they belong to, and fully and completely analyzes all of the law leading up to the point where we are today and gives the full picture of the law, not that limited picture that some abortion advocates try to give us.
5,000 copies of the report have been printed, a copy going to every MP and senator, and also to the entire ARPA donor base. It's also available online. We've got a link up to it from our homepage this week. The Manitoba government has introduced legislation to strengthen the notion of conscience protection for doctors and other healthcare professionals. Bill 34 is called the Medical Assistance in Dying, Protection for Health Professionals and Others Act. It would prevent sanctions against a health professional who refuses to participate in a medically assisted death, and also ensure that medical professionals are not disciplined for their beliefs. The bill prohibits a professional regulatory body, such as the College of Physicians and Surgeons, from requiring its members to participate in medically assisted death. The college already has guidelines on this issue that say doctors in Manitoba may refuse to provide medical assistance in dying. They can also refuse to refer the patient to another physician who would provide this, but they do have to provide patients with timely access to a resource that will provide accurate information about MAID. They also have a duty to promptly inform the patient of any conscience-based objections they may have. Pro-life blogger Patricia Maloney has taken on a new project. She's written a series of blog posts debunking some misinformation that's being promoted by Joyce Arthur from the Abortion Rights Coalition of Canada, specifically about crisis pregnancy centers around the country. Maloney says Arthur's positions are simply not based in fact.
One of her biggest complaints about us is that we mislead women, that we give them misinformation, that we say we're medical clinics when we're not, or Christian ministries, on and on and on she goes. Basically, I've kind of gone through all of her complaints about us and tried to give another perspective. For instance, one of her complaints that we're Christian ministries. Well, I don't understand that. Some are Christian ministries, some are specifically not. And what's wrong with being a Christian ministry? I mean, to me, that's a good thing. They don't do terrible things to you. I mean, does Joyce Arthur have a problem with Christians?
She also says her research has given her a whole new perspective on what really goes on at these centers.
Crisis pregnancy centers give women options. Like, they tell them about all of their options, about abortion, about adoption, about keeping the child. And they don't coerce women into not having an abortion. Like, that just does not happen. These are really amazing places.
We link to the blog series from the Lighthouse News homepage this week. There's a new staff member coming alongside the ARPA team. Tabitha Ewart has just finished her law degree at the University of British Columbia, and she's moving to Ottawa this summer to do a year of articling with ARPA's legal team. To start her training, Tabitha attended a conference in London, Ontario earlier this month, a conference put on by the Christian Legal Institute.
We spent about 8 hours of every day in lectures or discussions, and we couldn't help carrying over those discussions into mealtimes and social times. There was just so much to glean from what was going on. In terms of what we were actually looking at, the focus was on Christian involvement in public life. And they accomplished this through a couple of different angles. There was sort of a foundational angle. What is our role? What does the Bible say our role is? And what does the story of the Bible say about our role? There was a lot of emphasis in this section on the fact that neutrality is a bit of a myth, how in everything we do, we are either covenant keepers or covenant breakers. So then we also looked at more specific issues going on right now. Life issues, religious freedom, we talked about polygamy and prostitution. And we would do it firstly from a theological perspective. What does the Bible actually say? And then we would look at what is going on in our culture. What is the law in this issue at this point, and where is it developing to?
When she's finished with her articling process and is admitted to the bar, the plan is to have her focus most of her efforts on the We Need a Law side of the ARPA organization. And finally, a last look back at the God and Government Youth Conference in Ottawa. 29 young people, mostly 11th and 12th graders from around the country, gathered in the nation's capital for 3 days earlier this month for training in politics, worldview, and apologetics. They had some interesting experiences, which are now documented in an online video. One of the students actually had an encounter with Justin Trudeau, although it'd be a stretch to say she actually met him.
Half met. We were walking out of the question period, and I didn't realize he was walking beside me, actually. And then I looked over, and I see all these bodyguards, and I was like, oh, someone's there. And then it was Justin Trudeau, and he looked at me and smiled. That was about it. And then I met the Minister of National Defense, and he talked to me for about 5 minutes or so about why we're here and why we were going to the question period. And he said that he would wave at me, but he didn't.
We've got a link up to the video testimonials this week. Back with more after this.
2017 marks the 150th birthday of Canada and the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. To commemorate these special occasions, ARPA Canada is hoping to present a Bible to every one of our approximately 1,200 federal and provincial leaders. Included with the Bible will be a card encouraging them to look to God's Word for life and wisdom. Are you willing to help with the Bible Project? You can donate online or by mail. To learn more, email us at info@arpacanada.ca. Thank you for your ongoing support.
And we're back on the program. The Supreme Court of Canada has agreed to hear a case that has profound implications for the legal relationship between church and state. It involves church discipline, and it centers on the question of whether someone who's been disciplined by a church can appeal that discipline, that censure, in the secular court system. ARPA is looking at filing for intervener status in this case. Lawyer John Sikkema is busy this week studying what it would take to file that application and whether or not it might be successful. I've reached him at his office in Ottawa. John, welcome back to Lighthouse News.
Thanks, Al. Good to be here.
So give me some background on this case. I mean, there's really a battle going on here between the authority of the state and ecclesiastical authority in the church. But let's start at the beginning. How did this all get going?
Sure. So a man named Mr. Wall is disciplined by his Jehovah's Witnesses congregation for being unrepentantly drunk, or in their view, not sufficiently repentant for a couple instances of drunkenness. And so as a result, the church disfellowships him. That's the term that the Jehovah's Witnesses use for essentially excommunicating. And Mr. Wall is a real estate agent. So Mr. Wall has something like half his business from fellow Jehovah's Witnesses, but they refuse to do business with him now because he is being disfellowshipped and shunned, according to their practice. So he loses some of his business, and since he's got a financial interest here, he takes the Jehovah's Witness congregation to court and challenges their decision to disfellowship him.
So I guess initially I would ask, what's the fundamental difference here between the disfellowshipping and the shunning that the JWs practice and what's sort of been historically considered church discipline in the more mainstream Protestant and Reformed way of thinking?
Yeah, I think that difference does play into how the case plays out. I mean, people generally can look at something like church discipline and see it as something controlling or even creepy. And I think some of those misconceptions about church discipline do come from people doing it wrong, as you know, Christians often do things wrong and not in accordance with how the Bible teaches. And here I think the Jehovah's Witnesses practice of shunning, that you don't do business with the person, you don't eat with them, you don't do other things. And that can even be between members of the same family. There's a certain amount of social shunning that occurs when a person is disfellowshipped. That seems to be a confusion of the purpose of discipline. So if you look at what is the end and the means of discipline, I think in our teaching, the point isn't to shun the individual. You know, it's Matthew who records for us, treat the person like an unbeliever or a tax collector. This is Matthew, the former tax collector. And so what does that mean to treat the unrepentant sinner who's being disciplined as a tax collector? Does it not mean to lovingly pursue that person with the aim of restoring them and, you know, to show them love? That may mean that they're not allowed to do certain things in the church, but the way that you relate to them is not to say, I'm not allowed to talk to you or help you or do business with you or any of those things anymore. That's my way of loving you as an unbeliever. I don't think that fits. So that, I think, would be the difference. And I think factually that plays into how sympathetic the court is to Mr. Wall. They are sympathetic towards him and they see him as losing business and he has a financial interest. And I think based on that sympathy, sometimes and get around what the law actually says when you're motivated in that way.
So what's really at stake here? I mean, as Reformed thinkers, we talk a lot about sphere sovereignty, and that's kind of ethereal to a lot of folks, but there's the authority of the sphere of the church, there's the authority of the sphere of the state. In this case, there appears to be, according to the lower court rulings, some overlap, and the question becomes who has precedence.
Yeah, I think if I try to put it in one sentence, it's, can a matter of church discipline be appealed from the church to the state? And so there may be legitimate areas of, you know, you say, overlap or interaction between the spheres, between church and state. But here it's kind of like the state becomes a synod or a higher level of appeal of a church discipline decision. So that's what's going on here. Mr. Wall is asking the court to say, can you decide that the congregation improperly disfellowshipped me? That raises question of church practice, it raises question of church doctrine, it raises question of judging him to be sufficiently repentant or not, things that the courts aren't equipped to do. So this case actually didn't get into that yet. It didn't get into, was he properly disfellowshipped? Was the procedure fair? Have his civil rights, his property rights, his contract rights, anything like that been violated? They just started with the question, do we even have jurisdiction here? Do we, the judges, have authority even to look into this case, or should we reject it out of hand? And so this is kind of a preliminary question before getting into the rest of the facts of the case. And both the lower court and the court of appeal decide, yes, we have authority to review the decision of the Jehovah's Witnesses congregation. And that's a problem. They're claiming the authority to do that.
And that's what's going to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear that. Now, moving forward, ARPA is considering applying for intervener status on that and considering putting together some kind of a coalition of churches in the same way that we did a coalition of independent schools and Christian schools in the Loyola case, correct? What might that look like, and how long is it going to take before we determine whether or not we're going to do that?
Well, it will need to be determined soon because the court has given leave to appeal on this case and arguments are starting to be filed now. So we'll need to move fairly quickly on that. But one of the reasons we want to get involved is to bring the Reformed perspective on church discipline to the public and to the courts, to remind the court of historical developments in relationship between church and state, and of the importance of church independence and the limit of state authority over the church historically, and as something that's just fundamental to the development of democracy and the rule of law. And we do also want to maybe highlight some differences between Reformed practice and Jehovah's Witness practice. We can definitely count on the Jehovah's Witness congregation and their lawyers to argue that freedom of association and freedom of religion gives them the authority to make these kinds of decisions. So we would want to reinforce that, but obviously not just repeat what the Jehovah's Witnesses lawyers are going to be saying about their constitutional freedom to do that. We'd want to put things in a broader legal historical context with a Reformed perspective to really impress on the court how important this is.
All right, we'll be watching this one closely going forward. John, thanks very much.
Thank you, Al.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.